The 10-story building was one of the largest structures still standing outside megacity Boston's walls. Akira stood in the basement of the building where most of the forces were stationed. Cyrus and his partner Chloe stood with Juno, Kobe, Fish, and Blinky. A pair of deep-sea diving droids they hadn't deployed guarded the entrances and exit. Kichiro was in an adjacent room with crates of grind shields and extra ammunition. Okami was by his side. Tig, Frost, and Ghost huddled behind them, waiting for orders. If all went to plan, Akira would write about this night in his new warrior codex. Across the globe, other rebels like them were moving in on the craters to attack the machines in a coordinated effort. The encrypted message Akira sent before leaving Neptune had reached their allies, but not as many answered the call as he had hoped. Some of the rebels out there had perished over the past week, discovered and destroyed by the machines. Akira just hoped Cross didn't know what was coming tonight. Judging by the destroyed skyline, it didn't seem the AI did know. Not a single enemy aircraft cruised over the buildings or crater. It seemed the machines launching to the moon had indeed opened a window to sneak into enemy territory with a Piran to destroy Cross, but they had still yet to finalize their plan. And they were running out of time to do it. Akira looked at the bright moon. Somewhere up there, the machines were attacking Kepler Station, and according to Tig, they were searching for Mesopotamia, where the bulk of humanity's remaining population was hiding. That, of course, assumed the machines hadn't already found the refuge and slaughtered everyone inside.
Juno, how's it coming?
I'm ready to bring a Piran online.
Okami trotted over with him to the table where Juno had set up her workstation. A holoport terminal was connected by archaic wires to nano drives and comm pads. There was also a transmitter that would disable enemy machines, the same one she had used at Katba Island. The group gathered around the table.
You're sure about this?
Yes.
Akira looked at Chloe. She seemed like a young girl when he'd met her, but now she seemed like a confident woman augmented and brought back to life thanks to a Piran. It was a far cry from when he had first seen her before E-Day in Megacity Paris. The whole situation might seem like a strange coincidence, but to Akira, it just reinforced his belief that this was fate. Fate that a Piran had helped orchestrate.
Bring a Piran online.
Juno nodded, then tapped the comm pad, hooked up to a holoport. A female hologram appeared before them. The apparition surveyed them all with a judicious gaze as Chloe stepped forward.
A Piran. Chloe Cotter. My child. Is it really you?
Cyrus followed Chloe toward the holoport.
I knew it wasn't you behind E-Day. I knew you would never hurt us.
A Piran winced as if she was remembering painful events.
I brought you this to help defeat Dr. Cross. It's an infiltration virus coded by Dr. Jason Crichton to destroy him.
Chloe reached into her vest and pulled out the drive she had carried all the way from Atlas Station. Juno took it and inserted it into a terminal. The hologram flashed repeatedly as a Piran downloaded the virus code.
Genius.
How exactly does this virus work?
A Piran faced the researcher from Neptune Station.
This is an infiltration virus that presents itself as an innocuous upgrade. Dr. Cross is upgrading his systems all the time, especially as he develops new monstrosities and technologies to wipe out humanity. Some of these upgrades are automated, produced by subroutines without Dr. Cross's explicit direction. Our virus will pretend to operate under one of these subroutines. Once it is uploaded, the upgrade is sent out to all machines on the network, thus shutting them down.
Won't Dr. Cross be able to detect this?
That is the genius part. By the time the upgrade is uploaded, all he will see on his end is me. And in his eyes, all I will be doing is searching his systems. He will think I am merely there for an intel grab, instead of installing this virus. Of course, he already believes he is the superior AI, especially after E-Day. Dr. Crichton realized Dr. Cross's major flaw is his ego, and banked on the fact that his AI will share that flaw. Dr. Cross will be proud to show off what he has created, giving me full access to install Dr. Crichton's virus that will kill everything inside his digital fortress. He will have no idea.
Genius indeed. Dr. Crichton did well.
Yes. Where is he? I would like to ask him some questions myself.
He's gone.
Gone? Where?
He's... Jason died. I'm very sorry, Aperion, but he gave his life so I could bring the virus to you.
For a moment, Aperion said nothing. Her features tightened into lines over her brow.
I am sorry. I was not expecting this.
A holographic tear dripped down her face. The AI closed her eyes, the hologram flickering. Akira looked to Juno.
What's going on?
Before Juno could respond, Aperion opened her eyes, wiped away new tears, and stiffened in front of them.
Again, my apologies. I needed to collect myself. Will someone please upload the most recent recon intel of the surrounding area?
Farland brought over another compad and handed it to Juno. She plugged it into a terminal. The AI vanished, replaced by a holographic map of Megacity Boston.
According to this intel, the enemy has built a hive under the former campus of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. That is not surprising, considering Dr. Cross once lectured there. The servers running the hive and connected to the enemy network will most likely be under the Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Building. Assuming they have taken advantage of existing facilities, I believe there will also be a comm center I can connect to that will distribute the upgrade worldwide and into space.
How do you know for sure?
Because I designed such a system before, and it will operate in a similar manner. All we need to do is sneak inside, tap into the servers, break through any security protocols, and then upload the virus.
And if Dr. Cross does sniff this out and shuts down the power?
We will have backup power.
By my calculations, the backup power devices you are bringing will be just enough to keep the comm pads and servers powered on. And if I have sufficiently advanced the virus through Otto's local systems, I will be able to regain control of his power grid. By the time he realizes what I have done, he will not be able to shut off the power, because I will be in charge.
Farland scratched his chin.
So we just sneak past hundreds of cane breaks, plus whatever science experiment freaks they have in there, and plug in our former savior, yeah?
Yes.
Jenkin?
Nope.
No, big kidding. No, big kidding.
Do you ever shut your ugly turd shooter?
Juno motioned for Blinky to be quiet as Kobe silently chuckled.
That hive is protected by hundreds of cane breaks. Some of them upgraded models. And we've seen some seriously demented creatures come out of there by our aerial drones. Twisted beasts that are no longer human.
And we will slay them all.
Big slay, big slay.
Blinky.
Big sorry.
Ghost slapped Blinky on the back of his head, silencing the machine.
So you have a plan to deal with those cane breaks?
Yes, a plan has already been put in motion. In 3 hours, allied forces around the world are going to attack 4 other megacities on 2 continents. Our submarine, the Pelican, is launching a strike with the remaining cruise missiles on the heart of the machine hive at Megacity Osaka.
How does that help?
A distraction. Hopefully, any major forces still in Megacity Boston will head to other sites with reinforcements.
Farland raised a brow.
And if they don't?
Then I will lead a group to draw the machines out.
I think you've used up your 9 lives already. That sounds like suicide.
That's why you're going to help me.
I should note, I will need someone with an LS-88 chip.
We had our chips removed. Why do you need one?
So I can connect to one. I will need a human guide with me to help connect to the network, bring me online, and upload the virus.
I think I can figure it out without a chip, perhaps. But we don't know what modifications Dr. Cross may have made to his servers. If we run into any challenges, I can speak directly to someone with a chip.
I have one still.
Aperion seemed to soften.
She isn't going into that hive. No way in hell.
I am afraid it is the only sure way for success.
Cyrus turned to Chloe.
You can't do this.
I have to do this.
If you're going, I'm going. I'm keeping my promise. I won't let anything happen to you, kid.
We'll all protect her. She'll have a grind shield too, along with a cool suit to mask her heat signature.
He crossed over to the map of the MIT campus.
Once the attack starts, we wait until the machines clear the area. If they don't, I will lead a counterattack to draw out the enemy here.
He pointed to a library building called the Great Dome. the horseshoe-shaped structure framed a large courtyard. That space would provide a perfect ambush site if they could get the machines inside.
I will lead them down Memorial Drive and across the Harvard Bridge to the other side of the Charles River. There, another team will be waiting to provide covering fire. This will provide an opportunity for Tig and his team to use a submersible to cross the river undetected. When given the all clear, Tig will lead his group into the campus and locate the servers.
Shadow Squad seemed more determined than ever, but Akira could see the uncertainty in so many of the other soldiers, including Farland, and what few men he had left under his command. It wasn't the first time Akira had seen the hopeless gazes. After all they had endured, he didn't blame them. His job as a leader was to make them believe what he did, that today they would defeat the machines.
Now is the time to summon all of your strength. What we accomplish tonight will echo in history when, not if, we succeed. We may be only a small fighting force, but what we lack in numbers, we make up for here.
Akira pounded his chest.
In my heart, I know our plan will work. In my heart, I know it's destiny that has brought us all together. Destiny will allow us to recreate a world for future generations. A world where we remember those we have lost, where we honor them, and where we never allow this type of destruction to plague humanity again.
The uncertain gazes brightened.
If we fight together, as one, we will achieve victory. I believe this to my very core.
Heads nodded. Akira had mustered as much hope as he could in these people. They had their orders. Now it was time to lead by action. Afterward, Akira had taken Kichiro outside. Ghost, Frost, Juno, Blinky, Toby, Fish, and a few volunteers would join them en route into the city. Juno strode out after them.
Hey! I didn't bring this to stay behind. Hopefully it will work on these new upgraded game breaks.
She held up her transmitter as she and Blinky walked over.
You might want these too. Go ahead, Blinky.
Big careful, big careful.
Blinky handed a satchel to Ghost, who reached in and pulled out a pair of grenades.
Homemade EMP bombs. Could be a bit touchy.
Thanks.
So, where do you want me?
Akira knew Juno well enough not to argue about her coming with them.
We'll find a place for you once we get out of there.
Big happy, big happy.
Across from them, Tig, Farland, Chloe, Cyrus, and 20 Pistons that had come from Neptune Station were getting ready to head to the submersibles a mile away. The rest of the troops gathered around Akira and his squad, including Kobe and his volunteers. There were also several people from Katbaa Island. The pre-combat sounds of weapons being charged and loaded formed a ritualistic song as the teams prepared for battle. Tig walked over to Akira.
Parting ways again. So much for a reunion, huh?
We won't be far.
Tig looked over at Chloe. Her helmet was pressed up against Cyrus's helmet.
Hey, make sure.
Don't worry. I won't let anything happen to her.
Akira nodded, and they shook hands.
See you soon, brother.
He climbed up into Kichiro's saddle as Tig marched off with the other team. When they were gone, Akira started in the opposite direction with his group. The hike to the megacity walls would take an hour and a half. They should arrive to their destination just about when the attacks kicked off across the world. For the first 30 minutes, they advanced through the ruins without detecting any enemy contacts. But as the group closed in on the walls, the faraway rattles of canebrakes drifted across the city. They kept going until they came to the wall of concrete that surrounded the heart of Boston. The road leading through the massive open gate was choked full of vehicles that had tried to flee on E-Day. Akira steered Kichiro around the blackened chassis of cars and trucks. Past the gate, they had a perfect view of their target. Three city blocks and the Charles River was all that separated them from MIT. The group got halfway there when the wail of a canebrake came again. This time, it wasn't so distant. Akira dismounted Kichiro and motioned for Ghost and Okami to join him inside an adjacent building. They ran up a series of cracked stairs until they reached the top floor. Akira kicked open a condo door and went over to a shattered window. From here, they could see the domed library. A crater had swallowed the buildings behind it. Using his rifle scope, Akira zoomed in on the crater, figuring that might be the entrance to the hive. Seeing no contacts, he moved the scope to check out the computer science and artificial intelligence building. That was Appearance target. Akira looked to the river next. The only way across seemed to be the Harvard Bridge. While the rest of the bridges had been destroyed, the machines had likely used this one over the past month to come and go to the Hive. Akira turned to Ghost.
If the attacks fail to draw out the enemy, we will launch our offensive over that bridge. Get the others. They'll provide cover fire from here.
Ghost took off back downstairs. In 15 minutes, the Pelican and their allies would launch the first stage of the attack. Tige and his team should be in the submersibles, waiting in the river by now. Footsteps came from the hallway a couple of minutes later. Juno was the first into the condo with Ghost and Frost. Blinky followed just behind them. Next came Kobe, Fish, and Hina.
How's this for a place to set up?
Juno looked around and set her tactical case on a dusty granite table.
It will work.
While she put her transmitter together, Blinky and Fish took up positions along the broken windows. Hina and Kobe and the other volunteers joined them. Juno finished screwing on the end of the transmitter.
I'm ready to...
Akira rushed over to a window as a hunter ship rose from the Hive crater.
Everyone down!
He hunched behind a wall. The building shook as the menacing craft blasted into the sky. Akira let out a sigh of relief as it vanished.
I didn't think the attacks were supposed to happen yet. Maybe one of our allies got discovered.
Akira hoped that wasn't the case, although it was likely. The soldiers inside the condo hunkered down as the mission clock ticked away. Akira swallowed when it hit zero and closed his eyes. He opened his eyes and watched the campus for movement. A minute passed since the countdown ended, and nothing moved. Frost motioned and Akira went over to her position. She handed him her sniper rifle and pointed to a crater beyond the library. Dozens of canebrakes flooded across the campus. When they got to the road next to the Charles River, they halted.
What are they doing?
Standing guard. They're preparing for an attack. Time for Plan B.
Akira started out of the room, exchanging a nod with Kobe and Hina. On their way out, Juno ran over. She stood on her tiptoes and gave him an unexpected hug. He patted her on the back.
We'll be okay.
Juno simply nodded. She looked like she wanted to say more, but before she could, she returned to Blinky.
Cute.
Focus on the mission. I want you up here with your sniper rifle, especially with that leg of yours.
Okay, I got you, Captain.
Ghost, you're with me. We cross the bridge and draw the enemy back over it.
Frost hefted up her 50 cal sniper rifle.
Right into my line of fire.
Okami, I'm sorry, but you have to stay here.
Akira patted the droid as the wolf dog let out a whine. Outside, he climbed into Kichiro's saddle and gigged the horse toward the bridge, hooves clattering over broken concrete. Ghost walked by his side, exchanging one final nod with Akira. All the while, the canebrakes rattling rose into a vicious symphony. As Akira advanced over the bridge, he could see them clambering across the opposite street like gigantic insects. Some took to rooftops, others patrolled in the dead grass. At the end of the bridge, Akira drew his swords. The blades glowed to life, hundreds of blue eyes twinkled across the campus, but none of the machines charged. Akira kicked Kichiro, launching the horse onto the street. Still, the machines didn't take the bait. They prowled along the buildings and streets, their eyes pointed like lasers at Ghost and Akira. Not a single one moved to attack. Akira switched to his rifle.
For War Commander Kantos, for my brother Kai, and for my son Takeshi.
Akira fired his rifle on full auto, breaking the sights over the fanned heads staring at him. Then came the avalanche he'd been waiting for. A group of 10 canebrakes bolted toward them. Plasma cannon spewed rounds through the air. Akira hardly had time to lower his rifle before a flurry of bolts slammed into their grind shields. The impacts nearly knocked him out of the saddle, and those first few rounds alone sent his shield plummeting to 60%. Kichiro galloped down the road, kicking up dust and ash. Three canebrakes darted ahead to cut them off as more came pouring out of the campus buildings. Akira pulled back on Kichiro's reins, and the horse slowed, nearly skidding to a stop. Then, with another tug on the reins, he turned Kichiro back toward the bridge. Bolts chased after them in a wall of relentless plasma fire. Segmented arms shot across the road, falling short, but not by much. Akira couldn't count the machines now. There were too many. The ground rumbled from the stampeding army. Ghost blasted into the air with his jetpack, lobbing EMP grenades into the horde. Plasma fire burst against his shield, knocking him into a tailspin.
Ghost! Get out of there!
A missile suddenly streaked away from the campus, chasing him. Akira spotted a modified canebrake with missile launchers instead of back-mounted arms. Ghost angled down and dove toward the water. An explosion burst over the river, but Akira couldn't see if the blast hit his brother in arms.
Ghost!
Pulse racing wildly, he held onto the reins as the horse pounded the ground, almost to the bridge now. He risked a glance behind him. Nearly every glowing blue eye he saw was after him. The machines had taken the bait. Now he just had to survive. More bolts streaked past them, some glancing his armor as they raced out onto the bridge.
Keep going, Kichiro. We're almost there.
Kichiro galloped faster, and Akira looked over his shoulder blade to see the canebrakes losing ground. The leaders of the pack had only just burst onto the bridge, still firing. But the bolts weren't the only thing the machines had in their arsenal. Two more missiles roared away from a canebrake, curving into the air over the bridge. Akira looked up just as those missiles came down on him. The first one slammed into the bridge in front of them, bursting in a wild ball of fire. The second hit Kichiro nearly straight on, exploding in a wave of fury that launched Akira from the saddle. He hit the concrete with a painful thud and skidded across the asphalt. Blood gushed from his nostrils, and the metallic taste danced over his tongue and the back of his throat. The blast must have injured something internally, as pain throbbed from deep in his chest and gut. Gunfire and plasma bolts ripped overhead as his comrades tried to provide covering fire. He could hear their distant voices, even as his mind struggled to comprehend what he was feeling.
Ghost! Kichiro!
A red glow winked on his HUD, alerting that his shield was depleted, the words critical damage flashing in red. Humming came from the clouds, forcing him to look up to see more red light, which raked back and forth from the sky. The glow illuminated a teardrop-shaped ship that lowered toward the bridge. Akira tried to move, but agony roiled in his guts. He reached down, feeling something wet. Blood clung to his fingers when he probed a damage in an armor plate covering his stomach. With one hand pressed against his wound, he searched for Kichiro. Smoke drifted away from piles of rubble and craters. To his left, he spotted a particularly large pile of rubble. It took him a moment to realize that rubble wasn't parts of the bridge. It was Kichiro. The horse lay still, front legs and one back leg gone.
No!
He started to crawl toward Kichiro. The canebrakes were still moving toward him, flooding across the bridge. Akira tried to draw a sword, but the movement sent pain lancing up from his gut again. He dropped his hand back down. The red beams from the hunter ship blazed out of the sky, hitting the bridge in front of him. It was over now. Akira's life was at its end. He would never write another passage in his warrior codex, but prayed his comrades would lead humanity to victory and hoped the distraction Akira and his team had provided would be enough for Tai to get Chloe and Apeiron inside the hive and allow them to destroy Dr. Otto Cross forever. Akira continued to crawl toward Kichiro. The mob of canebrakes hurtled across the bridge that shook from their stampede, drowning out any potential response from Ghost. Red sabers of light flickered in front of Akira, threatening to atomize his body before he reached his horse. He reached up again, squinting into the bright glow as those crimson beams suddenly tore into the advancing army of machines. In seconds, the beams brightened, intensifying. The canebrakes frozen in place melted in hunks of oozing piles like flowing lava. Turning on his side, Akira squinted at the blinding lights. The enemy spacecraft lowered over the bridge. The vents on the sides opened, and figures fast roped down to the ground. Akira heard them before he saw them, the voices of Coalition fighters, all wearing antlered helmets and bulky armor. They ran across the bridge, led by a figure 7 feet tall.
For Akira the Brave!
It was Engine Lieutenant Andy Jackson. Jackson bent down to help him as Akira had one hand on his side. Blood gushed between his fingers. Despite his injuries, he grabbed Jackson.
I should kill you. The war commander died because you broke orders at Katba.
What?
Kantos died, trying to contact the LDC, which is what you were supposed to do.
Jackson swallowed hard from the shock.
Jackson, come on!
Waving at him, Tomeo was on the bridge among the growing army of Coalition forces. The last of the commandos fast roped down to the bridge from the stolen hunter ship.
I should have never broken orders, Captain. And if we survive this, you can kill me. But right now, you need me.
Jackson hauled Akira up and over his shoulder.
I'm right behind you, Tomeo.
Kichiro!
Jackson looked back at the destroyed droid, but there was nothing they could do for Kichiro right now. Priority number one was getting Akira to safety. Ghost swooped down in his jetpack, water sluicing off his armor. He landed a few feet in front of Jackson.
I don't believe it! You son of a...
We gotta get him out of here.
The distinct rattles of the canebrakes sounded between the booming gunfire. Ghost looked in that direction.
Tell those coalition forces to lead those machines down the road to the west. We got other soldiers trying to sneak into a building across campus to upload a virus.
We'll keep the machines busy. Don't worry, brother.
Jackson handed Akira off to Ghost.
No! Kichiro!
Ghost blasted into the clouds of smoke while plumes drifted away from smoldering craters on the bridge. The Coalition fighters, 30 strong, were already at the other end. Their warlord, Heart Eater, was surrounded by a phalanx of the heaviest armored commandos, including Colonel Boar and Lieutenant Tumea. They charged over the hunks of melted alloy. The stolen hunter ship flew over the campus, destroying more of the machines. Jackson ran toward the commandos on the ground. He leapt over an undamaged frame, probably the work of an EMP, and ran harder, searching for Tumea. The soldiers on point reached the campus, greeted by the rattles of canebrakes and electronic wails that answered. Jackson ran through a corridor between two crumpled buildings in front of a courtyard with broken benches and wilted trees. A horseshoe-shaped building surrounded the space with a domed building overlooking it all. The doors at the bottom burst open, disgorging a pack of three canebrakes. The monsters ran on all fours across the grass. Coalition commandos had already climbed onto the roof of the structure on the right side of the park. Gunfire met the beasts pouring into their armor while the hunter ship lowered into position.
Jackson!
Tumea was on a ridge with the retaining wall facing the main area of combat. Jackson darted across a courtyard of grass and darted around the wall to Tumea, who was firing over the side with two other soldiers, all of them laughing.
Like shooting fish in a barrel!
Jackson ducked down as bolts sprayed overhead. One of the Coalition soldiers a few feet away toppled over the other side after taking a pull to the center of his helmet.
Oh, shite!
She hunched down next to Jackson, no longer laughing, as more bolts streaked over their heads. The rooftop suddenly began to shake. Jackson cautiously got up to see the hunter ship blasting more of the machines with energy beams. Return fire pounded the bottom of the hull, but it seemed to have little to no effect. Most of the canebrakes darted for cover. Jackson sighted up the fleeing enemy with his rifle, aiming for their fanned heads. He nailed several that should have been kill shots, but the alloy seemed far thicker and stronger. A horn blared above the din of battle. Jackson recognized the Coalition's call for help. It was coming from the Warlord's phalanx. The other Coalition fighter next to Tumea rushed off, leaving just the two of them. In the center of the courtyard below, Colonel Boar, Heart Eater, and their commandos were engaged in hand-to-hand combat with a pack of six canebrakes. One machine wrapped its arm around a soldier, lifting the man off the ground. Boar used his energy-spiked paddle to smack the fanned head, freeing the soldier. The commando slammed into the ground in a puff of dust. Jackson turned his rifle to provide covering fire when the ground shook.
What is that?
The hunter ship continued to fire on other canebrakes, its beams brightening and heating until the war droids melted into hissing mounds of metal. Several of the machines leapt off rooftops, extending their arms with blades that punched into the hull of the ship. They skittered up the sides toward the bulbous cockpit.
Shoot 'em off!
Jackson aimed his rifle up at a canebrake trying to squeeze through an open vent in the hull. With a squeeze of the trigger, he let off a burst that hit the machine in the back, knocking it loose. It dangled by an arm. Tumea fired off a salvo into the torso and back. The canebrake finally plummeted to the ground, landing in a heap of tangled limbs. The ground shook again, knocking Tumea off her feet. Jackson leaned against the retaining wall as a geyser of dirt and rock exploded from the courtyard. A gigantic bladed limb burst out of the structure like the leg of some monster crab. The heated tip ripped into the aft section of the hunter ship, slicing the vessel in half. The canebrake still clinging to the hull jumped off as the ship broke in half, the two pieces of it crashing to the ground in front of the destroyed dome in a gigantic cloud of debris. Dust and smoke rolled toward Jackson. He raised a hand to shield his face as it slammed through the canebrakes and Coalition fighters on the ground and then hit the building. The explosive power of that debris cloud swept him and Tumea off their feet. Jackson landed on his back not far from the caved-in portion behind them. He rolled to his stomach, but stayed down while blasts echoed across the courtyard. Other explosions bloomed from weapons and collapsing buildings. all set off on the exploding ship. Slowly, the noises waned, replaced by the shrieks of machines and injured humans. Jackson kept low with Tamea as they made their way up to the mangled railing. The entire building rocked, knocking them down before they could reach the edge. Voices called out from below to run. Tamea and Jackson got up just as the center of the courtyard folded inward. They both grabbed the railing during the quake that shook up the rooftop violently. Out of the riven hole in the ground, a mechanical monster pulled itself up using two front arms. This new machine was easily twice the size of the hunter ship it had destroyed with a bladed energy arm. It rose up on all six of those arms, twisting a shelled body with a spiked back. The bow and aft section were both arched tails, ending in what looked like enormous stingers.
What the hell is that?
Some sort of fucked up headless scorpion!
The monster twisted, homing in on the Coalition soldiers that had fallen to the ground. Heart Eater, Colonel Boar, and a dozen other warriors tried to run as the monster came lumbering after them. It struck out a stinger that crushed one of the men instantly, pressing his body deep into the soil. Tamea stood up, firing wildly.
Up here!
Tamea, no!
The rifle fire had no effect on the monster. Tamea slung her rifle and pulled out a grenade. As the soldiers ran into a building, the scorpion-like machine slammed a tail against a wall, shattering it in a heap of rubble. Tamea pitched the grenade at the spiked spine of the monstrosity. It exploded a few seconds later, shearing off two of the spikes. The machine coiled back one of its stingers that turned a fiery red. Before Jackson could move, it swiped through the air, slamming into the rooftop. The force sent chunks of concrete and rebar flying. Tamea went sailing through the air. Jackson reached up and caught her. She landed on top of him, face to face.
You'd have been a good fourth husband.
Tamea then offered a wicked grin, but her eyes tinged with a sadness.
Maybe in the next life.
Then she pushed herself off Jackson and whirled toward the rising stinger, firing her rifle as Jackson tried to get up. The blade ripped into her chest and out her back, turning her toward him. For a single second, he held her gaze, and then she was gone, plucked away into the air and tossed across the courtyard.
No!
Jackson scrambled up to the edge of the building. The adjacent structure that the warlord had fled into was starting to collapse. It finally gave way, sending up a mushroom cloud of debris skyward. Jackson stood there, stunned. He never even heard someone approaching, but whirled as a metal hand grabbed his shoulder. He brought up his rifle, only to have it knocked away. A Hummer worker droid pushed Jackson to the ground, and a second hovered over, aiming two smoking plasma cannons at him. His mind raced as he searched for a way to escape, but the machines didn't fire. They must have had other plans. Plans that would make him a prisoner.
You won't take me again!
Quiet.
Jackson looked as Ghost ran over from the open doorway. One of the robots turned its head to the engine.
This fucking asshole was going to shoot me.
Get up and follow us.
They had slipped into the building and down to the bottom floor with Frost and two soldiers Jackson didn't recognize.
We got most of the cane breaks, but we have no way to stop that thing.
Another piston walked into the hallway and waved.
Let's go!
They stepped into another room where another group of pistons and civilians were sheltering. A group of Coalition fighters were here too, including Colonel Boar. Jackson counted five total, but hoped more had survived. The two allied Hummer worker droids held security. On the floor were a dozen injured soldiers, including Akira. He was sitting up, his upper armor off and a hand on the bandage around his waist. He glanced up as Jackson, Frost, and Ghost stepped up.
We have to get that thing away from the campus.
Akira stood and took his hand off his side.
Let's end this.